So,
Blog Talk Radio.
Reverend Edward Pinckney, the only pastor in the history of mankind to ever be sent to prison for quoting the Bible. I'm happy today. I have my dear brother Larry Pinckney on the line. Larry, say hi to the audience.
Greetings, folks, brothers and sisters, and special greeting to you, my brother.
Hey, man, you know, it's always an honor to have you on the show, a true hero, a true soldier, a true warrior. I mean, you know, you know how I feel about having you. It's an honor for me just to have you this close to me. I mean, I love it, you know, and I want people to know and understand exactly this war that we're in. But before we get into that, I want to read this short letter. Well, it's a newspaper article that came through about this commissioner. Now, let me explain to you a little bit about this commissioner. She has never stood up for anything in her life. She gets a chance to say a few words, and now the commissioners in the city of Benton Harbor are getting ready to file a resolution on tomorrow. No confidence. Well, that don't mean very much to me. I don't know what it could mean to her. If you're going to tell me, I mean, the whole city don't have no confidence in the commissioners as a whole.
Exactly.
Yeah, so now, this is what makes this so, it got me all confused. Maybe somebody out there could call in and let us know exactly what something like this actually means, because we know no confidence. If you got no confidence, the city has no confidence in the whole commission, and then now they're going to vote to have no confidence in Juanita Henry. But let me read this real fast. It says here, another layer exposed, but we're not at the top yet. Drug cases dismissed following plea by corrupt narcotic cops. Southwest Michigan City Police Chief leaves his post. City may face civil suit over officer misconduct. Benton Harbor, Michigan. Barron County Prosecutor Art Carter has dismissed 40 drug convictions since members of the Benton Harbor Police Narcotic Unit pleaded guilty to federal charges that they made up evidence, conducted illegal searches, and wrongfully arrested people. Officer Andrew Collier pleaded guilty to participation in a pervasive pattern of police corruption last year and is serving 37 months in a federal prison. This month, Officer Bernard Hall, Collins' supervisor, admitted that he allowed and benefited from corruption that includes stealing seized property from the police department. Hall is expected to be sentenced in December. Carter said that he is continuing to review the many cases that involve the two officers who comprise the city's entire narcotic unit. They didn't engage in conduct in every single case. They did, Carter said, which is not true. The problem is that everybody who had a case now wants review. Although the majority of those who were charged following improper searches, arrests, pled guilty, and formally waived their right to appeal, Carter said that he is committed to reviewing the cases. In some instances where these convicted of flawed cases had gone on to be charged with subsequent crime, and because sentencing guidelines takes into account previous conviction, Carter found that in some cases sentences need to be adjusted in a manner that are not directly related to the misbehavior by the Benton Harbor Police. But we are getting through them. However, the fallout from the action by Collin Hall is far from over. Collin Hall may face civil suit for their role in violating people's rights, Carter said. Internal civil liability. From the perspective of the county, no one knew that information provided by the police was false, so there is a governmental immunity. As to the liability, and in the police department and within the city government, he said he is not sure of the depth of the liability. David Robinson, former police, Detroit police officer, turned Southfield attorney, told Michigan Messenger that he is researching case on behalf of six people who was wrongly arrested by Collin and whose cases have been dismissed as a result of Collin's conviction. Our intention is to file a federal civil rights cause of action under the 42 U.S.C. 1983 against the city and supervisor, the chief of police, and any responsible parties, Robinson said. Andrew Collins wrongfully arrested them and caused their detention. Not only is he responsible, arguably his employer, the city, was responsible. Robinson said that he believed that Collins' misbehavior had gone on over a significant period of time, which is true, that the Bittenhall Police Department failed to maintain a necessity procedure for supervision and failed to adequately respond to complaints by the citizens who warned of police abuse. Someone was asleep at the switch in terms of administrative responsibility to operate the police department, Robinson said. Benton Harbor City Commissioner. Now, this is what I want everybody to listen to. Benton Harbor City Commissioner Juanita Henry said she believed the city is responsible for the misdeed of its officers and that changes are underway as a result of the recent plea by Collins and Hall. One major step, she said, is the departure of Chief of Police Al Mingo, who is leaving his job at the end of this month. Mingo's departure, Henry said, eliminated 55% of the problem. He is the chief. He has authority over the whole police department. It happened on his watch. We are paying for his mistakes because of our citizens has been in prison. Henry said that she anticipated the city will face financial penalties as a result of the corruption in the police department. Now, here's the problem here. Juanita Henry, a commissioner, made this statement. Now what they're trying to do, the rest of the commissioner, is pin her ears back because she told the truth. Now they're in big trouble. Larry, can you help me with this? Help me figure out where they're going with this.
Well, it seems like they're I've been not even say it on the air, but they're definitely playing a game of what I call a game of chicken. The bottom line is, just like you said, clearly, Benton Harbor Commissioner Juanita Henry just told the truth. That's all
right.
She did.
Yeah.
I mean, now think about it. If a commissioner can't tell the truth without being sanctioned, what does that say about the everyday people? They don't stand a chance.
They don't stand a chance. And here's the thing. This thing goes all the way up. It's connected, not just here with the Benton Harbor City Commission, but also with the county commissioners.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because what this guy is trying to say, that they're not liable because they didn't know. I paraded 10 people that this guy had planted drugs on to testify for this one guy.
Mm-hmm.
The judge, the prosecutor, and this individual, own attorney, refused to allow these as witnesses to show a pattern. And when the county said they didn't know, they're not being truthful. Actually, what they're doing, they're telling us the story. So I almost got there. But Larry, I mean, how do stuff like this happen and people get away with it and people don't want to own up to the truth?
Well, we let them do it. I mean,
yeah.
The bottom line is that this is not limited to Benton Harbor. This is all over the country, but Benton Harbor is a perfect, if you'll excuse the term, example of how sick the society is. I mean, it's a perfect example. And, you know, for anyone to say that the head of a department, whether it's the police, whether it's the FBI, whether it's the U.S. government, whether it's local, city, or federal, that the head of a department is not responsible for the actions that the people engage in under him or her, to say that he's not responsible for that is ridiculous. Now, you know, this is something that, you know, this is how the system always turns to protect itself. It is outrageous. It is absolutely absurd and sick that the commissioners would even consider a vote of no confidence against Juanita Henry for simply telling the truth. Heck, she didn't even say half of it.
No, in fact, Larry, she really didn't say nothing. What she is saying is actually nothing. Matter of fact, the ones that was there during the time of college, they should be saying what she's saying.
Exactly.
They are responsible. They dropped the
That's
ball.
Right. That's right. And they know it.
But here's the deal, Larry. This has been going on for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason this guy Collins got busted, and let me tell you this, he didn't have a small amount of drugs in his locker. He had a whole locker full.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about, when you know about like they got cocaine, they have ounces and stuff. He had ounces and ounces of cocaine. He had marijuana. His whole locker was full. He had that heroin. He had all this stuff in his locker. Depends on what this person, what you know, who they want to plant it on, and what. And
mm-hmm.
and here's the thing: are you going to tell me that this guy got a whole locker full of stuff, this much stuff, and you don't know about it? And you're the chief of police.
Right. That he's working by himself.
Yeah. I'm not going to even buy that. I'm not that naive to believe for 1 second that they didn't know. And well, I could believe if I didn't tell these commissioners that this was going on, that they could get away with it. But unfortunately, I told them back in 2005. I went to them in 2006. I went to them in 2007. And he got busted in 2007. And I told them that this man was planting drugs on these individuals. I mean, when I said it, I didn't realize it was so many people. I figured maybe 20 at the most.
Mm-hmm.
But it's over 200 people that this guy, they done ruined the lives of people. But they've been doing it since the 90s.
Right.
And getting away with it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
How do you sit here and try to justify this knowing that you're wrong?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And knowing the lies, I noticed I was reading the article that you were reading, brother, and I noticed that it said that this guy got 37 months.
37 months.
It should have been 3,700 years.
Absolutely.
Okay, you know why? Mm-hmm. Because all the families that he has ruined, it's not just the 200 and some people, but each of those people came from families. Each of those families, you know, have other families. He has ruined their lives. And there are other, let me just be blunt, I'm sure there are other people out there who were working with him, meaning in the police department, okay, in positions of authority, who were working with him. So now, you know, 37 months? Come
yeah,
on, that's a sick joke.
But here's the deal. Just for the drugs he had in his locker, he should have got 37 months. But here you have planted drugs on over 200 people. I mean,
right.
It's disgraceful the way they got this thing set up. He have planted drugs, and if he had never had a fight in this white city, which is 99.9% Caucasian, if he had not went over there and had a fight in that bar with another Caucasian, he be still planting drugs on people right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he be still doing. The only mistake he made, not planting the drugs on the people, but when he went over there and had a fight,
mm-hmm.
a physical fight, and got arrested.
Mm-hmm.
That was his downfall. That was his downfall right there. I mean, you can plant drugs on African Americans all day and all night.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing ever happened. But you go over there and have one little fight, your butt is, you know, especially over here in St. Joe, you tow up if you go over there and do some crap like that. So they telling them all this time it was all right for you to plant the drugs on the black people.
Mm-hmm.
But if you come over to my town and you have a fight, even if it's not your fault, you know, I'm sending you to prison.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the message that they sending to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And yet and still, people don't get it. And then you got one person who's willing to tell the truth, and she's being sanctioned on tomorrow.
Which is just sick. That's the only word. You know, it shows how sick some of our folks are. Just truly, truly sick. There is no other word that can truly describe the despicableness of even considering to sanction this person for telling, you know, just a teeny weeny bit of the truth at that, okay, and gonna sanction this woman, gonna sanction this woman for speaking the truth. When all of those people, all of those commissioners should have been speaking the same truth and a lot more of it. But you know, the city of you know, Benton Harbor needs to wake up, wake up, wake up, because these kinds of things are slaps in the face. And then people want to turn around and talk about truth, justice, and democracy. Get real.
Hey,
but go
you,
ahead, brother.
You saying something too. And when you see what you're doing now, we need people like you here in the city of Benton Harbor who are willing to tell the truth and can back it up, because we got so many people scared and afraid to open their mouth, you know. And here's another thing. Now, by me being the president of the NAACP, they know that I am not taking this crap off these people.
Mm-hmm.
Folks that have never talked to me before now talks to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why she called me now.
Mm-hmm.
She calls Reverend Pinckney, and now, Reverend Pinckney, I need your help. I need you to take a stand, because you can handle all these commissioners put together. I can't. But you can do it, Reverend Pinckney. What shall I do now? Well, the best thing I can tell you right now is that I will go in there armed with me a lawyer. As a matter of fact, I called my dear friend Ted Parrish, my lawyer, my friend, and unfortunately, it's Sunday. But I'm going to try to get a hold of him and get him to go there with her, and he don't have to do nothing but sit there. He don't even have to open his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? All he do is have to sit there with his leg crossed. When they see him, you can watch him tremble, because they know that, you know, what they're doing is wrong. But
well,
they know.
Yeah.
They also know that she don't have the money to hire this type of a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
You see,
mm-hmm.
But I'm going to see, can I persuade him to go just for 15, 20 minutes so they can see his face? And, you know, and I love to see the look on their face when he walk in, when she walk in with him. You
mm-hmm.
see, but my thing is this, Larry. How do these people continue to get away with this stuff? How do they do it? How do we, I mean, our black brothers and sisters too. They do the things that they, I mean, this is so incredible. And yet and still, they trying to hold this girl accountable. This the statement she made is, it ain't nothing.
And what little bit she said was totally true.
Yeah.
You know, and these house Negroes, and that's what they are. That's what Malcolm X called them, and that's what they are. Why, these house Negroes have lost their minds, assuming they ever had any.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the bottom line is that it is totally unacceptable, obviously, in Benton Harbor and elsewhere in this country, it is unacceptable to tell the truth.
Yeah.
The truth, go to jail.
They do not want you to tell the truth. And here's what I'm going to do for her now. When I go over there and deal with the county commissioners, I'm going to pull them into this. The way I'm going to do it, I'm going to accuse them of knowing that this guy was planting drugs on people and they did nothing. That's
mm-hmm.
how I'm going to deal with them, because the evidence, I know for a fact that I attempted to tell them about when I tried to bring all them guys into the courtroom to testify, and the judge, the prosecutor, and the court-appointed attorney refused to put them on the witness list.
Mm-hmm.
And so now what we got now, they knew about it, and they can't say they didn't know about it.
Right.
You see
right.
what I'm saying? And this one guy, he was so upset, this court-appointed attorney, he got so mad that he said that he wasn't going to defend this guy. This guy had to go in there and be his own attorney. He had to call, you know, call, no, he couldn't call the witness in that wasn't on the witness list, because he had to submit that list that morning. And that night, this attorney decided that he was not going to defend him anymore. So now he has no witness list. But that's the kind of game they've been playing for years. These court-appointed attorneys have been doing this to people for so long, and we have done nothing.
Right, right.
And
right.
I tell you, Larry, if you came over here and just court watch, I mean, for 1 week, I mean, you'd be sick in your stomach. I mean, the amount of time that they give one of these guys for possession. Now listen to this: for possession of the planted drugs on this one guy, this guy got 11 years in prison. I mean,
and yet the cop gets 37 months for
right.
planting drugs on over 200 people.
Yeah, I mean,
people need to think about that.
Right, but they, but who, but look, the problem is if it does not happen directly to you, if it don't happen directly to you, most people don't care. If it don't happen to your son, most people don't care. See, we got this no, I don't care attitude. If you know, I don't want him to go plant some drugs on me because I don't have no money to get no lawyer. This is the attitude of the people, Larry. This attitude that they have is so disgraceful and shameful that, you know, you really, like, here's the thing for me. I know that you cannot fight for people who will not fight for themselves.
That's right.
The hardest thing in the world to do is to fight for people who will not fight for themselves. I mean, even their children. Anytime you find people who won't stand up and fight for their children, it's hard. How they'd rather fight you than fight these folks.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Plantation Negroes, they have what I call the three monkey mentality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, see no evil, speak no evil, hear no evil. And for God's sake, don't tell the truth.
Absolutely.
You know, and this kind of mentality, this slave mentality, is what keeps us in the deplorable situation economically, socially, and politically that we are in. Half of the problem is we ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And you said it, my brother, Reverend Pinckney, when you said, and they would rather fight us, the people who are trying to stand up for justice, they'd rather fight against us than stand up themselves for justice, even for their own children, even for their spouses, for their brothers or sisters. They would rather do that, and that's what Malcolm meant when he talked about the slave who looked at the master and said, the master's house was on fire, and the slave said, oh, our house is burning.
Yeah.
Our house is burning. You know, we need to get past that. We better get past it quick, because at stake is literally everything. And I want to emphasize, while we're talking about Benton Harbor, this is not limited to Benton Harbor.
Right,
but
right.
You know, this is throughout this nation. But Benton Harbor is the perfect example of what, if you will excuse that word, perfect, because it's a horrible example,
mm-hmm,
of what is actually going on throughout this nation.
Absolutely. And the shameful thing here in Benton Harbor, they're still burning crosses right here in Benton Harbor, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
How
mm-hmm
do you, I mean, here we talk about the year 2009, 2010 is coming up. And here we are still allowing people to burn crosses. We still allow people to wear their sheets. Well, actually, their robes is their sheets here. You know, they wear the robes, which is their sheets. And we still allow them to continue to do this and get away with it.
That's right.
And nobody willing to take a stand. Nobody willing to say, well, hey, there's got to be something wrong there somewhere. Somebody have to say this sooner or later, Larry. When I say this, somebody have to. When are we going to learn, Larry? When are we going to take this thing to a whole different level?
You've begun that process. You're definitely a part of that process. I just want to remind, you know, our listeners, and you, as you well know, you've begun it. But it's only a beginning, and we've got to go past the beginning.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We got to go past this and take this to a whole different level and try to unify, you know,
mm-hmm,
all these different groups. You know, like one of the things that I came up with, you know, I know for a fact that there's these ministers here who hates my guts.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't care about that. You see,
mm-hmm,
my thing is this. I'm going to pull you in. I'm not going to get all y'all, but I'm going to get me two or three of y'all.
I know that's
right.
You see
what I'm saying? Because I don't need every last one. I would like to have every one of y'all. But if I can get me two or three, and then they go out and get a couple, I'm on. It's on then. Because that's
mm-hmm
my goal. My goal is see, anytime you're around ministers, they think they're bigger than life anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You see, they think they own the world. But we're going to have to figure out a way how we can do things different and start helping each other, you know. If somebody living in Indiana, South Bend, and they need our help, we're supposed to be there to support them.
That's right.
And if we need their help, they're supposed to be here to support us.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way I know how to neutralize these people.
Right.
We got to stop, 'cause in my eyesight, it's more of us than them. And that's the only way I know. Larry, I don't know no other way. I mean, what would the Black Panther Party do in a situation like this? Talk to me about that. How would they handle this situation, knowing that this girl is saying something correct, knowing that these guys are planning drugs on over 200 people? What would the Black Panther Party say?
Well, we just get even louder and more organized. And when I say even louder, we would do exactly what you're doing, Reverend Pinckney. Mm. We would get louder about it. We would spread the word everywhere, and we would organize. And we would tell people to their faces what they really are. And that includes these bourgeois, half-stepping, hypocritical house Negroes. Okay? And we tell them to their face. And we tell the people it's time for the people to come together. You know, sometimes we have to shake ourselves and our brothers and sisters. So we got to shake ourselves to come to our senses. And the party, when I say the party, I mean the Black Panther Party, believed in organizing. They believe in speaking truth to power. Tell it like it is. Let the chips fall where they may. And you know, there was a program called the Counterintelligence Program, COINTELPRO.
Okay.
It was a program to discredit, to frame, to imprison, to murder. People need to understand this program still goes on. They may call it the Patriot Act, but it still goes on.
It's just under a different name. That's basically what it is.
That's right. That's right, brother. That's right. We've got to come together, each one teach one. And like you said, whether we get two or three at a time or five or six at a time or 10 at a time is not important. What is important is that we get as many as we can and each one teach one or two or 10.
That's right.
You know, and we got to intensify in that. And it's time to stop being scared, because you know what? If you're going to die, and we don't have to die.
That's right.
We would stand up and fight. But if you're going to die, die like a human. Die with dignity. Die so that the people might live, and
that's
that other people will follow your example, and so that others will live. Stand up for you. Stand up. Stand up. That's what we need to do. That's what the Black Panther Party would have done and did back in the day, which is really, in a sense, still.
Absolutely. Hey, let me ask you a question. Back in your day, did you have any problems similar to this one?
Oh, many. Many times. Many times. I give you some examples where people talk about oftentimes, or those who know, that one of the programs, national programs, the project that the Black Panther Party instituted was a breakfast program for children, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We were determined that children would be fed. Free breakfast. We're not talking about no money.
Yes.
Okay? And medical programs. Well, people, how did we get this done? Well, we had some Negroes, and I do mean Negroes as in no growth, okay, who had a little bit. So we went to them and we said, you know what? You living in and off of the community. It is time for you, like it or not, as Bobby Seale would say.
Uh-huh.
It is time for you to give back to the community. Okay? Because if you don't give back to the community, we will expose you to the community.
Okay.
We had that problem. It's certainly nothing new on the plantation, which this whole country is a plantation. And you know, there were other situations where, as Jamil Al-Amin, better known as H.R.A.P. Brown, said, you know, brothers and sisters, some of them would walk around with their afros, with just beautiful afros, walk around with their dashikis, beautiful dashikis. But as H.R.A.P. Brown said, what you going to do? Beat him? You going to butt him with your afro? You going to beat him to death with your dashiki? No, you got to get out there and organize. Go ahead, brother.
I know that. It was R.A.P. Brown, was he from Oakland too?
Actually, R.A.P. was in Oakland, but R.A.P. was actually from down south. R.A.P. went to LSU and Howard University in D.C., but he was from Louisiana.
Okay.
But R.A.P. was in fact out in Oakland, and he became the honorary minister of justice for the Black Panther Party. And as everybody knows, I assume that they framed R.A.P. and R.A.P. in prison because he was framed.
Oh, absolutely. Matter of fact, he's doing a life sentence right now, ain't he?
That's right.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Hey, when you talk about Bobby Seale, what was his occupation before? He was in the service. Is that correct?
Oh yes, Bobby. I believe it was the Air Force.
Air Force.
Yeah. And go ahead, brother.
He was some kind of they said some kind of a science ship or something. I think he used to work on rockets or something.
I'm not sure what his actual job was. I know he got into trouble for speaking truth to power, even in the military.
Right.
These people don't understand it. It's just wherever you are, you got to stand up. And Bobby stood up. This is before the founding of the party, the Black Panther Party, of which he was co-founder with Huey P. Newton.
Okay.
And Bobby was also an incredible musician, among other things. He was just amazing. He was an orator, meaning a fantastic speaker. But more than anything else, Bobby was an amazing organizer because he was of the people. Well, he's still alive, but I'm talking about back in the day in terms
we always think of Bobby as past tense. But, you know, I do myself, and I'm guilty of that. I usually when I think of Bobby Seale is, you know, he was. I use the term he was this. He was that. But yet he's still living. And a bad brother.
No, not a bad brother. And the thing that we try to emphasize as far as the party is concerned, Bobby was chair of the party, and co-founder of the party. Huey P. Newton was chief theoretician of the party and co-founder of the Black Panther Party. But while both brother Huey and Bobby were incredibly important, as Sister Kathleen Cleaver and Eldridge and Erica Huggins and I mean, I can go on and on and on. The people who were the most important were what we call the rank and file, sisters and brothers.
Mm-hmm.
The rank and file. They didn't have big titles. They were members of the party, and they did what's called the grunt work.
Mm-hmm.
They were the ones out there selling the newspapers. They were the ones passing out the food to kids so they could eat. They were the ones who were escorting seniors back and forth home. They were the ones driving the ambulance for free medical service and running the clinics. They were the ones who made it possible for black people to get to the prisons to visit their loved ones. The rank and file brothers and sisters of the party. And that's what we need. We need rank and file folk.
Oh, absolutely. And you said something. You said that you had them actually inside the clinic, helping out inside the clinic?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Wow. Oh, I love it.
I mean, this is the thing that people don't understand. The party actually physically, our membership did these things. They were there. It wasn't about just standing out and watching. We provided transportation for the brothers and sisters in the community. We raised funds for the brothers and sisters in the community. And frankly, anybody else who was poor, who believed in the struggle for equality, okay? But when it came to the free medical clinics, like Brother Billy was saying the other day, two of those free medical clinics, even though the Black Panther Party was wiped out physically, two of the medical clinics that we started still exist, one in Oregon and one in Seattle, because the community said, no, we want this. We're not going to let this go. So the community people are running them now.
Wow. That should be a good example for Obama, shouldn't it?
One would hope so.
Yeah.
Of course,
I mean, you know, some of the work that the Black Panther Party have done, you know, even today will be so incredible. And we're talking 40 years ago.
That is correct.
Yeah, we're talking 40 years ago. And the work that y'all started, and you know, the one that I myself was more impressed with was the breakfast program. Because during that period of time, nobody, you know, you talking about a free breakfast at a school, we had to pay for everything. Lunch.
Everything.
So if you want something from a school, you had to pay for it.
Right.
But yet and still, you out, the Black Panther Party actually, and you what's so good about it, you know, even in the city of Chicago, we had that breakfast program, and
oh, yeah,
it was
of course.
There, you know,
yeah.
And it was perfect for what what the Black Panther Party was trying to do. And I tell you,
yeah,
I learned a lot from that, because even today, you know, I get chill bumps all up and down me when you speak of the Black Panther. That's why I enjoy talking about it. And we could talk about it on the show all day long, because the Black Panther Party is something that people should be talking about. You know, and, you know, Fred Hampton Jr. came here in 2003 to speak on my behalf. I saw him in Chicago. He was marching. He was driving around my sister's house, and I stopped and saw him. And he, you know, we were just happy to see each other. I was driving, and he was doing a march. I said, "Man," I said, "you know," and it was like, you know, I hadn't saw him in about 3 years, and it was
right.
I mean, it was so amazing, you know, because like I said, you know, his dad was pretty much around my age. I think
right.
we were probably the same identical age, if I'm correct. But
mm-hmm.
he was, you know, we both been. But it was that was so incredible. You know, here's something, too, that maybe a lot of people don't know. When Fred Hampton got killed, did you know that was in his mother's house?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was his mother's house.
But let me just say something else that maybe people don't know. The people who were murdered, the Panther members who were murdered by the Chicago police working together with the FBI, the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, this hasn't changed. Let's face reality. Because if we face reality, we can change reality.
That's
if we
right.
don't face it, we can't change it. But if
Absolutely.
We face it, we can change it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when Fred was murdered along with Mark Clark. And there were a number of other party members who were seriously wounded. But these
yes.
two brothers were the targets, Fred and Mark, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you know who gave the police the interior drawing of the apartment where the murders took place, the murders by the police and feds?
No.
It was an agent. So by that, I mean an agent, somebody claiming to be down with the party.
Mm-hmm.
All right? We
wow.
have to understand that this is nothing new. This is absolutely nothing new. But you know, we have to expect that these things are going to happen and prepare for them.
Absolutely.
You know, it's just like in South Africa when the ANC, the African National Congress, contrary to popular opinion, people say, they had some change. They brought about change without violence. These people
yeah.
must be crazy.
Mm-hmm.
They did all kinds of things. They had armed struggle, and the change is still not over in South Africa because conditions are still terrible. But anyway,
absolutely.
You know, my point is that they found out that one of the biggest agents that was working with the apartheid government of South Africa was the head. Listen to me now, the head of security for who? The ANC.
Which
means that a lot of brothers and sisters who were set up, who were tortured, who were murdered, who were framed, etc., it was due to the complicity. So we've always had our house Negroes and you know, our Toms and Thomasinas, our sellouts. You know, that's nothing historically new.
Mm-hmm.
But what goes around does come around. And
that's
right. what we got to get our brothers and sisters and all justice-loving people in the community, whether it's Benton Harbor or the rest of this country, we've got to get them to understand, keep standing up, do the right thing, because sooner or later, you know, first they may criticize you, then they may ignore you, and
mm-hmm.
then what happens? Then you win.
That's right.
But you have to be consistent.
That's right.
You
That's...
have to be. You know, and as you always say, Reverend Pinckney, you always say there is so much more. There's more of us than them, and there
right.
is.
Mm-hmm.
There's far more of us than them. But what we have to remember is we have got to bring ourselves together. We have to function according to the principles, the political principles, not a bunch of crazies, but with political principles and understanding what our goals and objectives are. And that's why you're so dangerous to these people like the commissioners, people like the judicial system. You're dangerous, not in a physical sense, but you're dangerous because you're daring to wake people up to their actual power and potential.
Absolutely.
You know, you're dangerous in the same way that Brother Malcolm was dangerous. You're dangerous in the same way that Sister Rosa Parks, when she stood up and said, I am not going to get off this bus. As a matter of fact, I'm going to sit myself down and now. You see, you know, you're dangerous in that sense because you're waking up the consciousness of the people. And all we need is about, I say about 10, 12 more Reverend Pinckneys in Benton Harbor, and it's over.
Well, you know, one of the things that I do have that most people always have a plan for these folks. And, and I think my thing is this. The only thing you can do is say no. And I don't think that people are willing to say no to me just that much right now. And my goal is to get people to thinking on that level. Let's get out here and do something. Let's take a stand for what's right. Let's go down there to those commissioners and tell them what they're doing is wrong. Let's go out there and tell the people that's out in the street, the Whirlpools and the Cornerstone Alliance, the Harbor Shores people, let's go tell them what you're doing is wrong. Let's go tell them what, I'm going to say this, I know they're not going to want to listen, but you have to show them. See,
right.
you can tell them and they don't want to listen, but if you show them that you're capable, then they'll listen. You know, then because they don't need all this bad publicity. They don't need it. No matter how hard they, you know, you sit here and say, well, they're not going to listen to us. They may not, but my goal is to wear you down. You see, and that's what I do. And my thing is because I'm consistent if nothing else. You
right.
see, you can look, a person can almost know exactly what I'm going to do because they're going to say, well, if nothing else, Reverend Pinckney is very consistent. He's going to continue doing until he wins at what he's trying to do. Because I believe in keep trying until you are successful. You know, but this time, use a different method, you know. I don't want to be doing the same thing over and over again, but I want to make a few adjustments to what I was doing and my plan to make it work better. Because that's how you deal with something like that. That's why the Black Panther Party was so valuable, because they did the things that was necessary to win. You know, they see, people didn't believe in actually win. Back in them days, people were thinking differently. People was more willing to organize. People now, you almost have to twist their arm to take them to the store. You know, so that's how that worked. But I'm always excited when it comes to seeing people that actually doing stuff. And I know how difficult it is. I know people don't, you know. And here's the thing that kills me, Larry. We are the busiest people there is in the world, and they busting the grate. I mean, we just find every single excuse not to do something instead of finding an excuse to do it. See, if you have to try to find an excuse not to do something, you got a major problem. You should be trying to find an excuse to do it.
Right.
Because it's not about you.
Right, right. Well, let me give you an example of what you just said, my brother. It was something that Sister Maya Angelou said a long time ago, and I just loved it. She said it so well, and I'm probably not going to do it justice. But she was talking about the bus boycott, Montgomery, Alabama. You know, when you boycott, that means you're not gonna ride that bus. You're not gonna participate in paying and then sitting in the back of the bus and being degraded, et cetera, et cetera. So there was this white woman, younger white woman, right?
Okay.
Who lived with her mother, who they apparently had a pretty nice, you know, bought nice big semi mansion, and they had some black servants, and one of the servants, this black woman, who's very, very smart, okay, very, very smart, and she was very close to the young white woman whose mother owned the place, right?
Okay.
And this was during the time of the boycott, when black people were saying, no, we're not riding these buses, we're not going to, no, forget that, okay? And so the older white woman went up to the black woman, who was at least her age, if not older, and said, you know, now Sarah, now I know you're not gonna have nothing to do with that boycott. Now are you? You gonna keep coming to work, right? You're not gonna have you know what the sister said.
What?
She said, "Oh no, I'm not gonna have nothing to do with no boycott. Me? Well, I'm gonna walk to work every day."
Yeah.
Yes, she wasn't gonna ride that bus. Okay. She said, "No, I'm not gonna have nothing to do with that boycott. I'm walking to work." Okay.
Look. Matter of fact, you did do it justice. I mean, you told us, "No, I'm not gonna have nothing in this world to do with that boycott. I'm just gonna walk to work so I can get to your house. I'm just gonna start out a little early. That's all."
Yeah.
I'm just gonna stop. Well, you can bet I'm gonna be on time. So don't worry about me. I'm just gonna walk to work. I ain't worried about no boycott. I ain't getting on that bus and boycott.
No. Meanwhile, that's exactly what the boycott was all about.
Right.
Obviously. But that's the power of our people. So the young white woman looks at the older black woman who just answered her mother, and she said. She said, why do you act like that? Why didn't you just tell her that, you know, you are deeply involved in the boycott? Which, of course, is what she did, but it's how she did it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
The black woman replied, looking at the young white woman, she said, "Child, when your head is in the lion's mouth, you don't yank it out. You scratch his head and pull it out." And that's what we people got to understand. There's more than one way to wage this struggle.
There's
many ways to wage this struggle. And what reminded me of this story, which is a true story.
I heard that story. That's a good one.
Yeah, well, what reminded me of it, Reverend Pinkney, is what you said. You know, what you said about how so many of us will look for reasons not to do what we should do.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
we need to do like that old black woman did, all right?
Yeah, well,
she looked for a reason not to catch the bus.
Mm-hmm.
She looked for a reason to support that boycott and support the struggle of our people. That's what we need to be doing, looking for how we can support ourselves.
Collectively. I love it. You know, and when you think about that, that should be our thing right there, you know. No, I'm not supporting no boycott. You won't see me supporting that boycott. I'm just going to walk to work. That's all. Matter of fact, I'm going to get up a whole hour too early so I can just walk so I don't have to support that boycott. You know, nose them. I am not supporting no boycott. And you can't make me. I love it. Man, I love it, you know. And, you know, I haven't heard that in a long time, but that's a good one, man. I love it. I love it because it sums up everything, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the way people thought, you know, up until the 70s, we acted like that.
Yes.
I think in the 70s, we kind of like the last part of the 70s, we kind of lost everything we had gained,
mm-hmm.
you see, and still losing.
Mm-hmm.
We're losing so much now. Now what they're doing, I'm going to tell you this quick story about the Pied Piper.
Mm.
You know, they refused to pay him.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want to pay him, right? So for removing all the rats out of the city, right?
Right.
So what he did, he took all the children.
Mm-hmm.
See, it's deeper than that. When he took the children, he took their future.
Mm-hmm.
You see, now they had no future. That's what he destroyed. See, the
right.
Pied Piper was a deep story that most people didn't quite get. They thought it was all about the rats and them not paying. But he took the future away from this whole town.
Mm-hmm.
They had no more future.
Right.
And that's what's happening today.
Right.
That's the same. They got a Pied Piper destroying everything that we're looking forward to achieving. Because it's the young folks. That's who they after right now. That's
that
the future.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
the future. And think about that. See, people, when you first heard the story of the Pied Piper, you thought, most people thought it was something. Oh, that's terrible. But then they start taking the kids. But it was like it's a little kid thing, a little kid play. But they didn't see the other side of it. Now, when he took the kids, he took their future.
Right.
And that's what's happening today.
That's what's happening.
Our future.
Right. And we're letting them do it.
Right. You know, they're a Pied Piper. That's all they are.
Yeah. You know, we need to take that Pied Piper flute away from them. And what is that? Why, that's the media. That's all that dumb stuff they put out there to take the attention of our young people away. That's all that disinformation and misinformation. That's that flute, that Pied Piper flute.
Mm-hmm.
That flute.
Mm-hmm.
We need to take that flute away and give a flute of real information to our brothers and sisters, our young ones especially. Let them see mama and daddy standing up. Let them see brother and sister, older brother and sister standing up. Let them see that. Let them see that, because that's the best example, you know, we can give, we can pass on. I like that. That's a great example that you use of the Pied Piper. We must not let them take our future.
Absolutely. And that's what they've been doing. It started in the late 70s, how they started doing this. Because remember this, we was always a close-knitted families. Black people were close. I mean, they were so close, the community was so close. Somebody got sick, everybody in the community would come and help that individual.
Right.
If a person gets sick now, you can stay in your house and die. Nobody cares. Nobody know.
Exactly.
You see, but we were different. I mean, we was different people. So what they have done now, they have broke us down to our lowest terms almost. Now we got to build ourselves up, because they've been trying to destroy us for over 200 years.
Oh, yeah.
Over 400 years when we came here. So what we have to do, we have to start rebuilding. You know, we got to build the minds up of these young folks, you see. And my compassion is for these young folks. It's for them. It ain't, these old, I call them old dogs. These old dogs, you know, we can take them out to the prairie.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
And you have the word that when a horse, you know, we shoot horses, don't we? You know? that's what I'm, you know, we have to do. But we have to change the way that, I mean, true leaders now, we can't lead these folks who you can't lead.
Right.
You know, we got to start dealing with these young folks, and we got to find something, a tool that will fit into what we're trying to accomplish here. I mean, and we don't need no more Pied Pipers, you see.
No.
And we got to, we got to, like you said, take away that pipe.
Right.
Take it away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we can do it.
Yeah, we, and brother, you are doing it along with the relatively few, and it's going to get bigger. But you are doing it along with the relatively few brothers and sisters right now in Benton Harbor. You're doing it. And you know, we both know that this is a struggle. We both know that the authorities are going to do everything they can, including the Negroidians that work with them, the sellout house Negroes. We know that they're going to do everything they can to neutralize us, to discredit us, to destroy us, to imprison us. But you know what? That's expected.
Absolutely.
They ain't gonna do nothing to us that they haven't done before.
Absolutely, because they don't have any more new tricks.
Right.
They don't
right.
have any more new tricks. The thing is that we have to do. We have to start thinking about when the '60s and the '70s, and start dealing like that, and start caring enough for each other to support each other. You know, willing to sacrifice for each other, willing to take things to the next level, because.
Right.
We don't do that no more. We don't stand up no more. We just don't do, Larry. I don't know what to say. We, you know, some of the things, we got so many backstabbers now. And you, anytime you can go in there, go into a courtroom for $5 and lie on a person and think it's all right. We got some major issues.
Yes. And we gotta address those major issues, because if they do it for $5, they do it for free. And
absolutely.
What does that tell you? That tells you that they have a slave mentality.
Absolutely.
And we need to regain that which we have given up. It's not just that the system stole it.
No.
We let them take it. We let them take it.
Yeah,
we gave it up.
Look, everything the Black Panthers did, everything they did back in the '60s and '70s, we gave it back. We get everything right back to them and more. See, we just didn't get give back some of the things we gained. We gave them back. We gave them everything we gained back, and some of the other stuff they took back. So
right.
You know, we just have to realize where we at, what we need to do, and take this thing to a whole different level, a level that people can understand. That, you know, my thing is this: is more of us than them. I don't even see. I think when it's more of one group of one group of people, you get aggressive. You see, that's why I'm aggressive, because I know it's more of us. You might have all the guns and you got the law protecting you and all this kind of thing. But look, government is ran by the people for the people. Anytime it's not ran by the people and for the people, you better get on your bicycle and start making some changes around here. You
I
see,
know that's right.
And then remember this: there's never, never, ever a change without a conflict.
I don't care.
You know, I don't see it happening. Never happen. There would never be, because whatever I got, I'm not giving it up without a fight.
I know that's right. That's right, my brother. And you know, I always say, comfortable people don't make change, and change is what we really need. We got to have change, but comfortable people don't make change. So these folks who want to sit back, I'm comfortable, they don't even understand that the boat that they're in is sinking.
That's right.
Like the Titanic. It's like, the Titanic going down, and they sitting back on the aft deck, you know, thinking they got it going together. But, you know, we have to build our own. And the more the system makes people uncomfortable, the more guaranteed that we are. If we do what we're supposed to do, okay, if we really do what we're supposed to do, then the more guaranteed that we are, that we can bring about real change, not this fake change that we can deceive in, but real change that we, the people, can believe in. Why? Because we brought it about ourselves, not the government,
Absolutely.
But ourselves.
Absolutely. And you know, and we got to move forward. And I'm telling everybody who's listening to this program today, we have to deal with the young folks.
Yes.
Don't worry about these older folks. Deal with the young folks. That is our future. If we don't do anything else, let's try to convince them, train them, educate them that, you know, that we need them and they need us. And it's time for them to understand that we got to pass the torch to them.
Right.
You know, because we're not going to be here forever.
That's right.
So we want to pass the torch to these young folks, but we got to train them. They don't know.
Right.
They don't know nothing about Malcolm X. They don't know nothing about Martin Luther King and all these folks. They don't even have a clue. Garvey. They don't know nothing about Garvey. They don't know nothing about these people. They're not teaching them about this anymore. That's the last.
I said, of course not. You're right. You're right.
And the thing, they don't teach them about the Black Panther Party, all the good things they did. The only thing they want to talk about the bad thing, but that's the news media. That's why we have to educate them. And I know that, you know, we get more and more listeners now, more than ever before. And I'm overly impressed with, you know, the people listening. People are actually listening to Pinckney and Pinckney. They love it. They love it. I mean, we love them.
We love them.
Yeah, we got 90 seconds left, but, you know, we love the deal. But listen, why don't you give us a minute or so of just some real talk? You know what I'm saying? I mean, whatever your heart desires, we want to talk about the Black Panther Party. We want to talk about tell folks something, anything.
Well, you know, we always said in the party that the power of the people is stronger than the man's technology. And that is more true today than ever before. The power of the people is stronger than the man's technology. So every time they tell you about Napoleon Bonaparte, you remind them that Napoleon Bonaparte historically meant his defeat at the hands of a ragtag bunch of people in the island of Haiti by a man named Toussaint Louverture. Okay? We got a history, and we need to inspire each other, be we black, white, brown, red, or yellow. We need to inspire each other, take back what is ours. And Reverend Pinckney, I love you. I thank you so much. You're out there with the people. The people are with you. And you got one place to go. Up,
that's
my
it.
Brother.
That's
up.
It. Hey, And, you know, I really, really appreciate you. I love you. And I know that there's nothing in this world that, you know, I wouldn't do for you because you're my brother. And I just want to leave these thoughts that, you know, you can kill a revolution myth, but you can't kill the revolution.
So you're right.
Yeah, so that's where we're going to go, and that's where we at right now. But that at that statement, time has just ran out. But we'll be back next week with Pinckney
yep.
and Pinckney. Reverend Edward Pinckney and Larry Pinckney. We run this show for the people, and it's by the people, because we love you. Talk to you later. Have a good
right,
night,
brother.
Everybody. Hey, take care, my brother.
You too. Love you.
Love you too. Good night. Call
right.
me later.
All right.
All right.
We'll do it.